welcome to the show. My name is Cole Azus. It's great to see you on this Tuesday in November. At the gates of an events venue in Houston, Texas, flowers and candles have been placed as a memorial for several people who died on Friday night. They were among the 50,000 who attended the Astroworld Festival, a music concert at NRG Park that was organized and headlined by rapper Travis Scott. Numerous lawsuits have been filed against him, the concert's promoter and entertainment company, and rapper and singer Drake, who is also performing at Astroworld. The Houston Police Department says its criminal investigation will likely take weeks, if not longer, to determine who's at fault. But here's what we know. As Travis Scott was getting ready to go on shortly after 9 o'clock, thousands of people rushed toward the stage. Those who were already near the front were trapped with nowhere to go, and as Scott started his performance, the situation got worse. Some people were crushed against each other and the stage or trampled by the crowd. Despite a relatively large police presence, people's calls for help couldn't be heard above the music. An ambulance made its way into the crowd to help. Two audience members told CNN that Scott stopped the concert multiple times to point out that people were hurt, but by the time the show was finally called off, hundreds had been injured, more than a dozen were hospitalized, and eight people, ranging in age from 14 to 27 years old, had died. As of Monday, there were at least five others in critical condition. Who knew what, when, and who's responsible are questions authorities are trying to figure out. In 2019, three people were trampled and hospitalized at this same festival, but an operations plan for Astroworld didn't include a specific strategy for dealing with a surge of concertgoers.
It was so tragic, many of them describing that they were packed in there like sardines, that it was very difficult to breathe, and that now they're so traumatized by what happened. Some of them saying they're never going to a Travis Scott concert again. Take a listen.
I've never been in such chaos, like so unorganized, and just so many people like slamming into me.
And you could feel like everybody pushing up behind you, like you couldn't move your arms, you couldn't breathe, like you couldn't see anything. It was like you were seeing the back of like really tall people's heads. So like when everybody was moving, like there was like 15 to like 20 minutes where like we weren't in control of our bodies.
Now, all this as new questions are surfacing about Houston officials being concerned before this concert turned deadly. The New York Times reporting that the Houston police chief went to Travis Scott's trailer before he performed because he was concerned about the energy in the crowd. Here's what we know about the timeline. According to the Houston Police Department, about 9:15 was when the crowd started compressing towards the stage. By 9:38, that event had turned into a mass casualty event, according to HPD, with one officer describing that there were multiple people on the ground in cardiac arrest needing medical attention. At about 10:10, that concert was shut down. And according to the fire chief, it took about an hour for all of those 50,000 people to disperse. Now, Live Nation, Astroworld Festival, and Travis Scott issuing statements, all saying that they are heartbroken, that they're devastated, but that's not enough for some of the concert goers. There's been multiple lawsuits already filed, some of them claiming gross negligence, saying that these concert promoters, that the organizers did not do a good job, that it was not a safe venue, and that's why they are now filing a lawsuit. We're, of course, expecting probably more lawsuits to happen.
10-second trivia. Which of these places is part of the Kingdom of the Netherlands? Belgium, Faroe Islands, Aruba, or Bermuda? The islands of Curaçao, St. Martin, and Aruba are all part of the Kingdom of the Netherlands. Environmentalists estimate there are millions of tons of plastic in the Earth's oceans and millions more tons flowing out to sea each year. As much as 80% of it is believed to come from coastlines and rivers, and there are a number of efforts being made around the world to clean it up or prevent it from getting there in the first place. One of them is a simple catchment system powered by bubbles, as in... Now, it can't catch everything, but its creators say it has been effective and easy to install in a canal in the Netherlands.
I think for me, the ocean or water has always been fascinating. To see plastic in our oceans and how it's damaging our environment, that hurts, obviously. So So I was thinking about all sorts of mechanical ways of how we can live more in tune with the environment rather than to exploit it.
According to the World Economic Forum, 8 million tons of plastic waste are being leaked into our oceans every year. That's the equivalent of an entire garbage truck being dumped every 3 minutes. And the source of the problem? The world's cities.
If you see some of the rivers in the Netherlands, but also in Spain, in Indonesia, you can tell that this problem in the oceans, it's being created by us. And if we can stop it closer to home, it also becomes more visible.
Here in Amsterdam, a simple solution has been found that could stop up to 86% of plastic waste ever reaching the oceans. A barrier made of bubbles.
So the way the bubble barrier works is basically just a tube that we place diagonally on the bottom of the waterway. The tube has a lot of tiny holes. We pump air through it, and the air bubbles will rise towards the surface. And then so we bring plastic, which is in suspension, towards the surface. And then at the surface, together with the natural flow of the river, we also bring plastic that's already at the surface towards one side of the river, which is our second component of the bubble barrier system, which is where we retain the waste until it's removed and then taken for processing. I think the simplicity of the system is what is really appealing. In theory, it's just a tube and a catchment system. If you want to do anything in rivers, ship traffic is going to be dominant. That's an economic driver. We won't be able to stop that. So we would have to find a solution which would be, you know, not hindering all the other existing activities and, of course, also the ecosystem.
The bubble barrier does exactly that. While it provides no impediment to water traffic and marine life can pass through freely, it also catches plastic waste of all sizes. Anything from 1 millimeter scraps of microplastic to windsurfing boards and abandoned TVs.
So with every bubble barrier system that we're implementing, we're trying to work together with the city and, you know, local NGOs to evaluate what the bubble barrier is catching, to implement new policies and additional measures on land and upstream so that collectively in the future we can work towards less plastic entering in the water in the first place.
Our next step is a bubble barrier within Europe, or actually multiple within Europe, and we of course want to move to Asia because we think we can make a lot of impact there, and that's what we're going for right now.
Bubble barrier is one part of the approach. It's not going to be our silver bullet to just solve the whole plastic pollution problem, but we think it's a significant and very important tool to really, you know, have a pragmatic approach of saying we know we have plastic in our oceans, we know rivers and canals are major pathways, we can stop this today to tackle this problem in a more integrated approach, that we look at how are things being produced, how are things being collected, how are they being processed and recycled.
The first ever Call to Earth Day is taking place this Wednesday. It's part of a new partnership between CNN and Rolex, and it highlights what the companies recognize as a planet worth protecting. If you, your class, or your school would like to get involved, please visit cnn.com/calltoearth. South Dakota State University's mascot is the Jackrabbits, but never underestimate the swiftness of the moose. This happened ahead of last weekend's rivalry game between South Dakota State and North Dakota State. Police and stadium officials worked to shoo the animal out of the venue. We can't confirm that the moose had any impact on the game, though he would have scored himself if he hadn't stepped out of bounds. But South Dakota State later won. I think the team needs to recruit him. I mean, he could run all day, he's got plenty of moosel. Plus, he could follow in the footsteps of Baker Moosefield, Emu Smith, Joe Moostana, Muska Fitzpatrick, Joe Namoose, Mooshel Falk, and of course, Randy Moose. That's mostly all for today, but before we leave, we want to give a shout out to you, the students of Garfield Senior High School watching from Woodbridge, Virginia. Thank you for your comment on our YouTube channel. I'm Coral Amoose for CNN.